White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 276.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition, 2, 1, 0, we have a liftoff. We have a liftoff and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and this week we are joined by Ron Fortier and Eric Franklin. Ron is publisher of Airship 27 Productions, one of the founding fathers of the New Pulp movement, and one of my own personal mentors as a writer, lo these many years. And I've been so remiss in not having him on the show before now, so I'm thrilled to have him on. Eric is a filmmaker and pulp writer, and he is at the helm of an upcoming project that we are all very excited about and gathered here to talk about as producer, director, and screenwriter. So, Ron and Eric, welcome aboard the White Rocket Show. I'm so glad to have you.
Well, thanks a lot, Van. I really appreciate the invitation. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, glad to be aboard the White Rocket.
Yes, absolutely. I've been wanting to get Ron on for a long time, and just things never have worked out, but he's got a project in the works now that we had to stop everything to make sure we had him on for. And Eric, you are obviously very heavily involved in that. So one of you guys kind of kick us off by, well, let me back up for a second. The property we're talking about first, and then we'll talk about what you're doing with it. The property is Brother Bones. Ron, tell the folks listening who Brother Bones is and what is the deal with this character.
All right, sure. Brother Bones is my personal homage to the classic pulp Avengers, Van. I love characters like the Shadow and the Spider, those mysterious figures, vigilantes who operate outside the law and bringing in mastermind criminals and whatnot. And so, you know, shortly after launching Airship 27 Productions, I got the thinking about how much fun it would be to create one of these kinds of mask Avengers, and created Brother Bones, the undead Avenger. What I wanted to do is keep that whole, the twin 45s, blowing away the bad guys kind of sensibilities that those pulps had, but to tweak it a little bit, and, you know, not just make it a copycat version of what had come before. And how I did that was to add the supernatural elements to this. Brother Bones is actually a zombie, if you will, and ergo the subtitle, The Undead Avenger. So in the opening origin story, we learn he is Tommy Bonello, a twin brother, his brother Jack. They work for Topper Wilde, the crime boss of a fictional city in the Northwest called Cape Noir. And they've been going around since they were teenagers, murdering and slaughtering people at random, and now they work for Topper Wilde. As the story unfolds, Tommy, somehow or other explained in the tale, finds himself one day with an actual conscience, and so tries to leave that life of murder and mayhem behind, but he can't. And ultimately, his brother Jack tracks him down, and his own brother shoots him. Well, rather than going to his fiery reward and you know, the brimstone of hell, he finds himself, his spirit, Tommy's spirit, finds itself caught in this limbo-like existence where the spirit of one of his former victims tells him the fates have decreed he's not to go to heaven or hell, but rather his spirit is to return to the land of the living and there become an avatar, a champion of the innocent, of the victims, to become an avenging spirit. And so sure enough, Tommy's spirit returns to Earth and basically invades his own brother's body and takes it over, destroying Jack's spirit. Mm. And now this animated corpse filled with Tommy Bonello's spirit dons a white skull mask, two blazing silver-plated 45, and becomes the, you know, the threat and the haunted specter that rules over Cape Noir, protecting the innocents and doing in the guilty. I've been writing his stories, as I said, close to a decade now, Van. I think I've written maybe a dozen stories themselves. And a few years ago, a colleague of ours, Roman Leary, mm-hmm. actually wrote a full-length Brother Bones novel. And that's what's available now to most of our readers on Amazon. The first collection is called Brother Bones, the Undead Avenger. It is followed by 6 Days of the Dragon by Mr. Leary. And then the second collection I did under the subtitle Tapestry of Blood. And that's how I created the character. He's always had a really solid following. I'm very happy about that. I go to conventions and fans are always talking to me about the stories and the creepiness of the character and the things they like about him and what's his future, et cetera, et cetera. And unbeknownst to me, while all this was going on, one of my biggest fans out there was Mr. Eric Franklin himself.
Okay, so let's turn to you, Eric, now and get that side of it. So Ron has created this character and he was writing stories about him. Now give us your perspective. You first discover this character, and what do you start thinking? How does it all start coming together?
Well, it started coming together is that I was looking to do some writing work in addition to film work, and I had found Airship 27 on the internet. I contacted Ron and said, hey, are you looking for a writer and you know, for any of your books? And he agreed to try me out, and so I wrote a story for the Black Bat character, which Ron liked and of course made my year. And I've been writing ever since, but I still wanted to I was curious what an Airship 27 book exactly was like, so I was browsing through their library, and Brother Bones really stood out to me. I mean, a lot of the characters looked great, but there was something just about the fact that there were multiple books of his, and I thought, okay, this is like a series I could really sink my teeth into. But also just something about the look of him with the menacing skull mask, and of course, as Ron mentioned, the homage to the Shadow and the Spider, because I love those characters too. Mm-hmm. So I ordered the book, and it went for a little bit into my to-read pile. I have a big stack over in the corner of my room. When I did get around to reading the books, actually, at that point I was in the hospital for something, but it did give me a chance to catch up on a lot of reading, and I was immediately hooked into the story that Ron just related to you. Mm-hmm. It was a very interesting origin story, and what I liked about it, I'd say the most, is that I'm always attracted to tales of redemption. Mm-hmm. But I liked the fact that it wasn't like a completed redemption of the fact that the character started off in a very dark place, and in some ways as Tommy almost left, but I like the fact that it wasn't enough, you know, the idea that his penance wasn't enough and he still had to do more. Mm. I thought that was a very unique aspect of the character. And I liked that as Brother Bones, it didn't have this, you know, he's the hero, you can relax aspect. I liked that he was, you know, just as frightening as his opponents, but you know, he was thankfully on the side of justice. I like that uncertainty and ambiguity about the character, and I think that's what really attracted me to you know, to keep reading. And of course I would be a little I'd read one story like, oh, this story's almost over, because I was so into it. But then immediately the next story started, and then, you know, it gets sucked into another adventure.
So you appreciated the character and the concept and everything. So how did you and your company end up going from, wow, this is a neat character, I'm enjoying reading these stories, to the project you have going on? Because I guess you need to kind of describe what's going on now.
Okay, well, that actually came because of my business partner, Daniel J. Husser. I had the book out one day, and we were working on another project. And he asked me what it was, so I told him. And he started reading through the book, and he also was absorbed in the material and said, Eric, this would make a really great movie. And I couldn't disagree with him, so... He said, you know, you and Ron like each other, right? I said, well, I assume so. He hasn't told me to, you know. But, like, he hasn't told me to stop writing and never contact him, so I guess it's going okay. So so what we did is we filmed in secret this, I think, 2 or so minute test video. And, we shot it in a weekend and, you know, did... compositing and visual effects to it, and sent it over to Ron. And Ron was, you know, he was, if you follow his postings, he was incredibly overjoyed by it. Mm-hmm. So we then, so from that point on, we decided to make, you know, it a reality. And, you know, we, Ron wrote the outline, because, you know, we all knew that for the story to work, we had to do the origin of the character. But, you know, Ron, you had realized, that isn't enough for a full-length movie. Mm-hmm. And so as we were talking, Ron was able to seamlessly weave the second story in the anthology, which is one of my favorites in that one. It was blended in, and there was a bit in the story that Ron left, a little bit ambiguous. That because the big thing for me, and I know definitely for Ron as the author, is that we didn't want to contradict the source material in any way, or because, you know, I'm the type of guy who, I see when I go to see a book to movie adaptation, I'm able to give some leniency, but if you change the fundamentals of the character, then, you know, you've already irked me. So it was very crucial that, you know, the story melded, and that bit of ambiguity gave us a lot of freedom. And I think Ron had some kind of precognition about this.
that's really bizarre. And if I can backtrack a little bit, Van, you really have to understand what it was like for me that morning when I pulled up my email and I saw Eric's name, you know, mm-hmm. come up, and just thought, well, you know, Eric's sending me another submission, an idea for another story for Airship 27. And I see this attachment, and it's a video attachment. So I pull up his email, and, you know, very matter-of-factly, he goes, Ron, would you ever consider a Brother Bones movie? Now, I knew Eric and his associate, Daniel Husser, were filmmakers. And by this time, and Eric hasn't brought it up, but by this time, they've already produced a science fiction feature, which, incidentally, just this past week, Van, went up on Amazon Prime.
Oh, I was going to plug myself later with that, but yeah.
I have to do this. They worked on this thing for over 2 years. They've had a deal with a major Hollywood distributor. And the film is being shown overseas in China and Japan. And as I'm saying, this past week, Amazon Prime is showing it. It's called Revenge of the Lost. It's their first ever production. And I was familiar with this, again, with my association with Eric. They finished a second film, which is a comedy, which is even now in post-production. And the thing with these two guys, Van, is they never stop. I mean, as they're finishing up one project, they jump into another one. And so it's my luck, obviously, that they're fans of my work in Brother Bones. and had decided, you know, to hit me up to see if Brother Bones could be their next project. So I read that and I see the video clip, and it's 2.5 minutes, I believe. And I click on it and it comes up on my screen. And when Eric talks about Post's work they've done on it and special effects and everything, it's all there. Van, I about fell out of my chair, buddy. All right. I mean, it is magnificent. Okay. I mean, granted, I got it. You know, it was something they did over the weekend. It's crude in places. But you know what they did, Van? They captured the entire origin of Brother Bones in 2.5 minutes, what took me 4 chapters to write. You know, and that's when I got it. I went, oh, my God, these guys speak movie. They know cinema. Right. They understand that narrative. And, I mean, I called Valerie in, my wife. I showed it. She was all excited. So there was no hesitancy on my part to talk further with them. And so what we did was a few days later, we had a Skype phone conference to talk more about what it is they wanted to do. And again, as Eric's already related, realizing we were going to do Brother Bones, we had to do the origin story. But again, all of us understood it wouldn't fill a feature film. And that's when I'm thinking of the second story, which in the anthology is called Shield and Claw. And it features a werewolf villain. And as I'm thinking about that while talking with them, I realized I had left a crucial element in the narrative totally ambiguous and vague, Van. For whatever reason, I focused only on the particular villain, who he was, and why he comes up against Brother Bones. Mm-hmm. The mere fact that I did that, and again, as Eric suggests, maybe my ESP antennae were up or whatever, but it suddenly dawned on me that ambiguity was an open field where I could literally tie in
right.
the two plots, the mm-hmm. actual two plots, and make them work as a single narrative. I suggested that to them, and to their credit, they wanted me to write the screenplay. I mean, from day one, Eric and Daniel both have said, this is your property, these are your stories, this is what we want to see on the screen, this is what we want to film. So that they've allowed me all this say in what goes on. And so to that you know, point of respect of, you know, go ahead and write the screenplay. Well, I was hesitant, and I've written screenplays in the past, but you know what? They're collecting dust in my files. And that 2-minute little video that Eric and Daniel put together convinced me that they speak that language way better than I do. Mm. So the compromise was, let me write the screen treatment. Let me write the narrative. And I'll send it back to you when I'm done. You guys make whatever suggestions you want, and I'll redo it, and we'll keep doing it until we're happy. Give me the credits for the story, but you write the screenplay. And that's what we did. I literally took the plots from the first origin story and the Shield and Claw and spent a few days and wrote an entire outline, which went to about 14 pages, and sent it off to them.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was like the fastest 14 pages I think anyone's ever written.
My enthusiasm hasn't waned one bit. But I got to tell you, man, when I sent it off to them, I'm thinking, okay, so they're going to come back and say, well, you know, that doesn't work, Ron, or this doesn't work cinematically, et cetera, et cetera. And it's funny because it's such a great learning experience for me as a writer. They came back to me and said, well, we need more scenes. And I'm like, huh? And then they were explaining to me, like, well, you know, this character who appears in the treatment on page 10 or whatever, we just can't have him pop up in the story there. We need a little more introduction. Can you add a scene like around page 5 or 6? And that's what they kept doing to the point where I was beginning to understand the vast difference between writing a screenplay, something that's going to be on the screen, and writing a short story or a novel, Van. Because as you know, as an accomplished writer yourself, we can describe a lot of things in prose that are happening in a character's musings, his thoughts.
Right.
We can't do that on film.
That's right.
And that's where I was coming short. So Daniel and Eric weren't asking me to shorten anything. They were asking for more scenes.
For more.
to make this blatantly right out there so the viewing audience will understand what's going on. So this went back and forth. I think I did maybe 4 or 5 rewrites, Eric, till we were all happy. And then I turned around and said, thank you, gentlemen. I love what we have here. Go for it. Eric sat down, and I think he talks about my speed. I think within a week, Van, he sent me the completed shooting script. I read through it in an hour. I was thrilled to death. You cannot believe this thing is a fantastic script. He did an amazing job. Stuck totally to the narrative. And believe me, that's where we're at right now, working on that version and putting it together. And, you know, I'll let Eric, you know, bring you up to speed on where they are with the production.
Well, I got to tell you right now, talking about the script, I have written little scripts here and there, but just to kind of commiserate with what you were dealing with, I wrote a 66-page graphic novel script back in December and January and February. And that, I mean, I've written 15 novels, Ron, as you know, and some of them, you know, 100,000, 110,000 words. And writing that 66-page script was the hardest thing I've ever had to write in my life. You're right. It is a completely different, it's a different activity. It's a different language. It's a whole different action. And so, yeah, I mean, I can totally see. I mean, you have to do everything so differently. So, Eric, talk a little bit about putting that screenplay together. What did you think about what Ron had produced, and what did you have to do to it in that amazingly short time?
Well, I think that Ron's outline, of course, was very good. It's like he had written it out in a story format, like you would a rough outline for a book. And what Daniel and I did is then break it up like by scene and location. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just taking the paragraphs Ron had written and then almost like putting them on note cards, if you will. Mm-hmm. And we would look at certain areas that, I mean, we knew the story worked, but we wanted to make it accessible to people who haven't read the book yet. And, you know, and certain points you're thinking, you know, the pacing here is really good, but it gets a little fast here because I think at a certain point we went from a big werewolf fight to then a big shootout, and which, as thrilling as it would be, the audience, you know, it's something like they would need a breather. Mm. And at that point, what I would do is I would just go back to the book and, you know, reread a bit of the story. And if I found something in the story that would work, I would, you know, send it back to Ron saying, Hey, you know, this part of the story, I think that this could go well here. And, you know, and Ron agreed. And it's funny because, you know, I had worked for Ron for a while, and I guess, but never really with Ron on anything. I guess he and I were still feeling each other out just a little bit on, you know, how much control this side or that side. But, you know, I think it all went, you know, very well. Yeah, Ron, I would say, in his outline, and this helps so much as a filmmaker, you can tell he's written for comic books and other visual mediums because, you know, he really gets it, how visuals need to support the story. And I mean, if you read any of his books, they're all very, I'd say they're very heavy on adjectives, not in a way that's, you know, flowery, but definitely there was no you have an imagination, but you can picture the world so clearly, and that helped so much in writing the script. And I have to tell you that it's about the easiest script I've ever written, because I you know, we had great material there already. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes I would just, you know, lift dialogue directly from the book to the script itself, because one of the things that was important to me to capture was the way they spoke in the 30s, and it isn't just a matter of dropping in slang of that era, because when I'm used to writing more contemporary scripts where they talk like you and I, but Ron has a real ear for that kind of style, and I wanted to, you know, keep that in there. Mm-hmm. So thankfully, the only things Daniel and I really suggested, I think, were one or two structural changes, and then I'm not going to reveal what it is, but we shifted one part of Ron's outline to be a very great ending teaser.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yes. They send me the script, the first version of the script, and the outline. It was the outline. It wasn't the script. They sent me back a version of the outline, and I'm reading it. And again, all of it's fresh in my mind because they've got me adding these new scenes. And I have to tell you, Van, the joy of working with both Eric and Daniel is that there is, you know, there's no, what's the word I want? They're not trying to butter me up because I'm the writer of this. They're actual fans. And so there was no way, you know, they weren't familiar with the stories and the characters to the point, Van, where there are characters in the entire Brother Bones series, and especially that first collection, who don't show up for real in those first two stories. Yet Eric and Daniel both realized that when we were adding scenes, that was an open door. That was a potential where those characters could help us with the narrative. And they would come back to me and say, well, you know that female reporter that doesn't pop up until story number four? If we could use her in the opening segment where the gang war is going on in the city and have her from her perspective as a crime reporter, and I'm going, oh, my God, that's brilliant. Of course it is. All right. So we're all tapping the same source material. So sure enough, like I said, I finished like the fourth rewrite of the story outline. I send it back to them. They spend a day looking at it and then send it back to me and go, so what do you think of this one? We think we're there. What do you think of this now? All right. So I reread basically the stuff that I'd written, few pieces they'd added, and I'm reading it, and I get to a certain part in it, Van, where I instantly realized there was a scene missing. And I went, okay, you know, I'll finish reading, and then, you know, if it's not here, I'm going to have to ask Eric and Daniel what happened to that scene, because it was one that we all liked. Mm-hmm. Well, I continued to read. I've got like two pages left on the screen, and as I'm scrolling up to what's going to be the finale, all of a sudden, I got it. We were all in tune, all right, because I went, oh, my God, it's going to be a post-credit scene. It has to be. Sure enough, you get to the end. Eric and Daniel put, okay, end the movie, fade to black, credit, and there's that other scene. And I went, yes, yes. Oh, it's going to have fans going nuts. Even the newbies, all right, even the fresh people who've never heard of Brother Bones, never read the stories, will get what's going on. For my diehard fans, Van, that last closing scene at the end of the credits is going to drive them crazy. It is such a powerful scene. I absolutely love it. These guys are genius.
It's not a scene where Nick Fury shows up to recruit him in the Avengers, is it?
No. But it does deal with easily one of the most popular figures that I ever created in this series.
All right. Very good. Yep. Neat. I got to tell you, when you mentioned a minute ago, when Eric said it went from a big werewolf fight to a shootout, I'm thinking, well, you got people tuned in their attention now. If they weren't paying attention already, you got them probably hooked with that. So it sounds like it's just got tons of really fun, entertaining action and adventure going on all the way through it. Would that be accurate?
Oh, definitely. I would say that, and also I'd like to emphasize that it's a very strong character-driven piece. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things I really locked into is the characterization that Ron had written. We have in terms of entertainment, I think within the first 5 minutes, you know, like in Ron's book, we open with the Bordello shootout.
They literally kill like 30 people within the first 5 minutes of the movie, Van.
Definitely a new pulp movie. Well, you know, and that's
it is. Eric will talk about this. I'm just going to interrupt for one little second here, okay? Because he and I are on the same tune with all of this, and this is pulp, totally, Van. This is totally going to be a pulp movie. The thing is, in writing Brother Bones, I wasn't so much aware of the one aspect of it, but there are two. There are two strong aspects that weave their way through every single Brother Bones story that I've written. And what are those? Those are the classic 1940s Warner Brothers gangster movies and the late 30s Universal horror movies.
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay, and when you mash those up together, that's Brother Bones.
Yeah, I've been, it's, whenever we talk to people about the project, they're asking, like, so, how would you characterize this? And I eventually had to refine it from saying, well, it's pretty out there, to saying, okay, imagine if you combine a bit of, if you combine The Shadow and The Godfather, this is kind of what you would get.
Oh, there you go, right.
Shadow of the Godfather, Brother Bones. That sounds like a, that's like the subtitle of your next one, Brother Bones, Shadow of the Godfather.
Oh, all right. I'll steal that one. That's
make,
good.
Make a note, yeah. So we haven't really like come right out and said it, but what you've decided to do then is, because we've talked all around it, is you decided to make a movie. And so you got the script now. You talked about that. You got Ron's input and then you guys, and you got together a script. So talk a little bit more now about what happened and is going to happen and we want to happen once the script comes together and you're satisfied with the story part of it.
Okay, well, what we did is we started recruiting crew and talent to get them on board with the project. We held an extensive casting session in the Seattle area. That's where we're based, and also it's perfect for Cape Noir. Ron said it's a Pacific Northwest location, and I don't know if you've ever been to Seattle, but it is full of very deco architecture and having some Gothic influences. And I know I've joked before, one of my friends from college, she was new to the area, and when you see the city at night, she said, I expect to see Batman swinging from here. anyway, so we held an extensive casting session, and, you know, between the emails we got and some video submissions and people we interviewed, we saw at least over 80 people for, I think, about 20 or so speaking parts. And, you know, I wish I could hire all of them, but it was very tough to determine. But again, Ron and his partner, Rob Davis, who did a lot of wonderful illustrations to help us guide the casting process of, like, here's some concept art for these characters. And Daniel and myself, you know, we voted on our choices. And surprisingly, like a lot of other things on the project, we agreed with most of them. There were some, you know, back and forth, whether this person or that person. But I think we're all very happy with the cast. Then we also were engaging key crew personnel. Like Ron had put us in touch with two very talented composers, Bill Stromberg and John Morgan, who... they've done some work on some pretty big productions. Like they did the Starship Troopers 2 soundtrack, for example. They did some sci-fi features. I think one I remember they did off the top of my head was Bugs. But we had a phone interview with them, I think actually just with Bill, but it went over an hour, and it went from us talking business to just being film and film music fans at, you know, talking about the infinite potential, because Brother Bones, I think, is a very strong character who deserves his own iconic theme. And it was clear after we ironed out the business aspect, as soon as we got into the artistic aspect, it's something like, okay, well, I don't need to really direct these guys. They get exactly what I'm going for. So, you know, and, one of the things too is that I believe when I'm working with somebody, like, you know, Ron with the script or like the actors or the composers, is that they're creative people too. And if I just tell them what to do, I might as well, you know, it's like I'm a director, not really a dictator. So I think that they're going to come up with something truly iconic for Brother Bones. And we engaged a matte painter who's actually a dear friend of my fiance, her name is a Storm Cable, and Alana kept, you know, saying, "You've got to see the, you know, this girl that I'm friends with. Her work's extraordinary." And so I did, and of course, you know, like many things in life, she's absolutely correct. So, I contacted Storm, and she really liked the what we were going for, and she likes that aesthetic. And you know, if you check out her website, you can see she's a very, very talented artist. And then also we got a our makeup girl. And the funny thing is, Daniel and I were combing the internet for, you know, makeup people, and you have all these people willing to do, you know, just beauty makeups, things for like, you know, catalog photo shoots, bridal stuff, you know, and the like. And then we come across this one girl who's totally into horror movies and saying, you know, "Making people look pretty bores me. Can I do gunshot wounds and, you know, stabbings?" And you're like, "She's perfect. Can we have an interview?"
Yes.
And well, yeah, she flipped out when she found out that Bones uses 45s. Her comeback to Eric was, "Oh my God, that's going to make big holes."
Yep, she definitely knows.
I mean, from the time these guys finished the script, Van, they started scouting locations and getting, you know, permission from people where they wanted to shoot to get all of that caught up. They started working on the special effects that they're going to require for the film. And it's you know, it's extensive. I mean, even to the point where the lead characters are twins. So part of their challenge in the auditions was to find a really, really energetic, charismatic actor to play that particular role. Mm-hmm. I mean, by the end of the film, he'll have played twin brothers and then be our hero under the skull mask. All right. So they had the scouting locations in place. And I got to tell you, man, I get stories from Eric every now and then in the mail, and it literally cracks me up. One of the regular places in Cape Noir that a lot of the stuff happens is a bar called the Gridiron Saloon. So sure enough, Eric and Daniel find a bar tavern in Seattle that is perfect. It's decor is 1936 decor. So they go and meet with the proprietor, and they're in the bar itself, and I've seen pictures, and it's almost exactly the stuff that I imagined as I'm writing these stories. And so somewhere in that interview and talking about when they would be filming and how much of the bar they need, et cetera, the lady, I guess Eric is a co-owner or whatever, asked them if they'd like to see the rest of the building out back. So she takes them to the back of the bar, opens the door now into what is a lounge, and it's filled with red velvet sofas.
Uh-huh.
All right? And which they got from an old abandoned or an opera house that was being closed down.
Okay.
Van, it is so gauche, all right, that both Eric and Daniel looked at each other and went, "The bordello parlor scene." So now this actual tavern in downtown Seattle is actually going to be two different locations. Mm. It'll be partly the bordello, and it'll also be the Gridiron Saloon. And that's how, you know, these things have all fallen into place for these guys. It's absolutely amazing. And again, I can't talk enough. As Eric will say, the cast that they recruited, they, you know, again, they filmed, you know, 80 some odd people trying out for 20 speaking parts. Then what they did was they took the best of each character, did a very, very special YouTube thing that Rob and I could look at and make our contributions. And again, as Eric said, I think we were all like 98 to 99% all on the same page for each individual actor and the roles they were getting. It's really spooky, Van. Sometimes I see these actors, and I, you know, it's very much thinking of what I created and now seeing it come off the page in the flesh. Wow.
Yeah, got to be incredible. Just amazing. So where does the project stand now, Eric?
Well, the project now, it's going to pretty much hinge on a successful Kickstarter that we've got up and running.
Mm-hmm.
To do the film properly, we budgeted it at $100,000, which, if you look at it in like terms of Hollywood money, isn't all that much.
No.
Like I've quipped that that's like the coffee budget for the Avengers.
But really.
But anyway, too, it's like to pay the actors because. You know, these people are putting in a lot of time and effort, and I want to help support the entertainment industry, in Seattle, to pay the actors, to keep the actors fed, to get like those terrific locations that we were just talking about, is why we're running this Kickstarter. Daniel and I, as Ron had mentioned earlier, we're doing some special effects scenes and stuff like that. Like, a lot of it's getting the establishing shots done, and fans should look out because pretty soon we're doing a little demo of some of the various locations we've created digitally or with photo touch-ups. So that's probably going to be our next big update. It'll be pretty exciting to see. But I digress in that the project now is really in the hands of the people who want to see it. Ron and I have been promoting it like crazy. And I think that I've done more interviews in my life than this last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've enjoyed it. Don't get me wrong. I'm like a humble ham, if you will. I'll happily talk about my work, but but any questions about me, I'm like, I make this. I digress, but really our Kickstarter is running till August 6th. So we're hoping to, of course, get the support we need to make the production. And with the Kickstarter successfully completed, we're hoping for for an early 2018 release.
Okay. So we need for all the new pulp and action adventure and crime drama fiction fans out there to get involved, to step up and to make it happen. Because I mean, if you're going to go see it in the theater, you're going to pay to go see that. So what's a few extra bucks beforehand to make sure you even get a chance to see it, right? To make sure it happens.
Amen.
That's right.
Man.
It's exactly. Like you pay a little bit now, you pay a little bit later, and you get to see it and all that. Plus, you've got various rewards, right, for people in addition to just getting to see the movie made, right? There are more things that they will be able to have, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think the four of us, Ron, Rob, Daniel, and I, we had a four-hour-long talk, I believe, just discussing the prizes and everything like that. And, and we've got a lot of stuff that's, exclusive to this campaign,
mm-hmm.
For film fans and for Brother Bones fans. And, I'll let Ron describe some of that because,
He gets impassioned about this stuff. Yes, he does. Ben, like I think most Kickstarter campaigns at the lowest levels, okay, if people can help us. And, one of the things I want to point out to this is that, because somebody said something on Facebook a few weeks ago and with good intentions, all right? But it was a little snippy in the point of saying, $100,000 isn't chump change. And my reply to that was, of course we know that, all right? I mean, we all understand that. But here's the thing. The internet was made for something like this, all right? And if we can get the word out, and again, one of the reasons why we're so happy that you're having us on the show, the more we spread the word and the more it gets out there, if we could get thousands of people to learn about this project and to come and find the Kickstarter, then it's just a few bucks here and there, and we'll attain that goal. It is very much attainable, but that is all incumbent on us doing our jobs and promoting and getting the word out. Now, having said that, when you look at the premiums, there are a total from the lowest to the highest tier of donations a total of 18 different premiums. The lowest, obviously, and still so you know, endearing to us and be most grateful, is $10 will get your name on the credits. Mm-hmm. And when you go in the theater and you see this film, and at the end it's going to be a big thank you for helping to make this possible, your name will be on that credit roll. And believe me, you will have been a huge part of this dream becoming a reality. Now, as we move up from that those bottom tiers, there are going to be copies of some of the one-shot Brother Bones that are no longer in print. We're going to get them back in print for people. They're going to be all the Brother Bones Airship 27 books, the two collections and the novel, all of them signed by both myself and Rob Davis. All right. And then move up. Rob had done a preliminary movie poster that we've taken to Windy City and Pulp Fest. So that'll be another premium of getting an autographed copy of that premiere poster. Then we get into what I call the mid-level tiers, where we have some really absolutely remarkable premiums. Rob has actually agreed, Van, to do an original sketch of a character from the films. So we're not talking a print or whatever. It's basically, if you sign up to this tier, all right, then you can go to Rob Davis after the campaign's over and say, well, do Brother Bones or do Sally Page or do Top of Wow. And Rob is going to draw you that character and nice. Autograph it.
Nice.
So you're going to have an original Rob Davis sketch to put up on your wall from the Brother Bones production. Now, I'm not dissing Prince, because we've also got the next tier up, which is going to be four different Brother Bones prints, Van, by one from Jeff Butler, one from Doug Klaba, one from Mike Kaluta, and the other one by a really gifted Colorado artist named Jeff Slemons.
Wow.
Four different prints of Brother Bones by some of the best graphic illustrators in the business today.
No kidding.
Then, all right, up until this point, you're also going to get a copy of the shooting script autographed by Eric. Moving on up, you're going to get an original full-size, the actual movie poster. And that is going to be painted by a Colorado painter named Jeff Herndon, who very much, man, if you're familiar with the old classic movie posters of the 60s and 70s, and a guy named Drew Sturzman, he did some of the Indiana Jones posters and the early Star Wars posters. Very, very iconic painted poster. Well, this is going to be a collage. It's going to be a Brother Bones poster, the official poster that'll be on the slip covers for the DVDs and everything else, but a full-size poster by Jeff Herndon, an autograph by him. Moving on up from that, we're going to have, because we have two Hollywood composers, two of the best in the business, who are going to write an original score that will be recorded with a full symphony orchestra, you will get a CD of the sound score to Brother Bones.
Nice.
Right?
Wow.
Okay. Then, on top of that, to the next tier, and Eric explained this to me so that I began to understand it, you will get an unedited DVD version of the film itself. And that's really important, because Brother Bones will go through the same distribution channels as Eric and Daniel's previous two films. That meaning that when Ambler Entertainment Hollywood gets it and brings it to whatever markets, there's a good possibility that those markets, whether they're foreign or domestic, will ask for some editorial changes. And that's just a normal. That happens all the time. If you want the entire Brother Bones, the way Eric shoots it, unedited, that'll be one of those top tier premiums.
Nice.
And that will be a definitive collector's item, let me tell you. So that we work our way up to the top tier here. And the top tier that gets you all 18 premiums and goes for $800 is a 12-inch Brother Bones custom-made figure by Jace Marshall of Marshall Collectibles. And here's what's unique about this, man. He is sculpting the head of Tommy Bonello that you'll see under the skull mask from the actor playing the part. All right? He is going to make these only for this campaign. Now, he's made other Brother Bones figures in the past for many of my fans. He mm-hmm. and I have a deal together, and I've given him permission to do this. But we specifically wanted to get involved. Jace wanted to get involved with the movie and help support it. So the idea being is this particular version of Brother Bones will be the movie version. It will come with a certificate of authenticity that I will sign, and so will Jace. All right? When the campaign is over, Jace promises he will never make another version of this figure. He will make other Brother Bones, but he will never make another movie version. That will be the ultimate collectible wow. for any Brother Bones. There you go.
Just incredible stuff. Absolutely fantastic stuff. And people might like to know, too, and we'll give them the location here in just a second as we kind of move toward our end, that not only if you go to the Kickstarter page, which, again, I'm about to share with you, not only if you go to the Kickstarter pages, they're all kind of like all the rewards Ron was just talking about and all the information about the movie and the little video clip and everything. Not only is that, but they've actually even put together a pie chart showing how the money that they're raising is broken down into paying for everything they need to do. And I just think that's incredibly cool because it shows that not only are you guys, you know, trying to promote this property and get it funded, but you know, you guys have put enough thought into it that you know exactly how the money has to be used, and you're like getting every penny's worth out of it so that there's not a penny wasted, it seems to me. Is that accurate, guys?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Eric and Daniel will be commended. I'm like you, Van. When I saw that chart, I had the exact same mm-hmm. thoughts and feelings, and it's no surprise to me. All right, they have a professional background experience. They both went to film school, and they not only learned the creative aspects of filmmaking, they also learned the economy, the marketing, the business end. All right, and you're 100% right. Every single penny of that $100,000 will go into this film. Never mind that it will make the film something totally unique and special. You'll see it all up there on the screen, but it's going to end up being a huge boost to the Seattle economy and the theater community there.
That's awesome. Just everything about it is so cool. So to find it, let's see, you go to Kickstarter.com, and is there a direct link, or should they just put in Brother Bones and they'll go right to it? Because that's what I did. I went to Kickstarter.com and I just put in the search box Brother Bones and boom, went right to it. So is there a direct URL we can give out, Eric?
Yep. There is. It's nothing. It's nothing too catchy, but yeah. Okay, hang on. I'm pulling it up right now. Okay. Yeah, you might just be safer going searching Brother Bones because it's like /project/333. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Just go to Kickstarter.com and put in Brother Bones, and it'll search. It'll take you right to Brother Bones, the Undead Avenger, and you can throw some money at them, get some cool rewards, and have a part to play in making this thing happen, which is so exciting and so cool. So, any final concluding thoughts, gentlemen, as we sort of wrap up here? We've got people that will be lined up to go hopefully do that now. What else do we need to say before we wrap up about it? Ron, what do you got?
Well, the one thing I want to say, Van, which you know, you and I are part of this amazing community, this new pulp community, all right, that we have been for years. And as you know, in the past interviews, we've both been asked many, many times, where's the future of new pulps? Where do you mm-hmm. see this going?
That's right.
And we've both, and our colleagues, Tommy Hancock, Derek Ferguson, all the guys, have all come back and said, well, hopefully someday we'll get to that next step, the next media, that Hollywood or somebody will come knocking on our door. Well, here we are, Van. All mm-hmm. right. My real prayer is that this gets realized so that it becomes a huge hit and Hollywood takes notice. That Hollywood turns around and looks at Daniel and Eric and go, where the hell did you find this property? And they're going to turn around and say, it's called New Pulp. And send them to you and the Sentinels and Barry Reese and Peregrine and Dylan. And mm-hmm. come on, let's make this the first of lots of new pulp movies.
It works for me. Any last thoughts here, Eric?
Well, I think that, you know, one of the reasons that we latched onto it is because it's a new thing. And, I you know, people talk about, you know, fatigue of sequels or remakes or things like that. And I'm excited to offer them something new, well, in new pulp. And I have to say that since I you know, joined the community as a writer and now as, you know, a filmmaker, it's been a wonderfully welcoming community.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I feel really honored to that, for, you know, to be a part of hopefully New Pulp history.
Absolutely. We got to make this happen. Ron, you got any conventions coming up immediately? You're going to be at Pulp Fest, is that correct?
That's correct. End of August. And this year, for the first time ever, it's in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
So if any of our listeners are in the Pittsburgh area towards the, I think it's the last weekend of August, if I'm not mistaken, and it's a three-day show, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, please Google it, check it out, and if you have an opportunity, please stop by. Rob and I will be there with Airship 27. It's a great show. You know, you've been a past attendee and mm-hmm. guest. And so, yeah, if you've never been to a pulp convention, come on down. You will really get a kick out of it.
You guys will have some of the Brother Bones stuff there, won't you?
We certainly will.
Yeah, you can check that out. Just for note, in a week from today, folks, I will be a guest at LibertyCon. This is my first trip there in Chattanooga, but it is sold out. So if you're not already planning to go, you've missed out for this year. But that looks like a fun time. Then, of course, as most of you listeners know, I'll be at DragonCon again. Like my 20th year, I believe, this year, and then at Archon in St. Louis. I got to thank our patrons, as always, that keep our shows on the air, our platinum level Nicholas Cottrell, as well as our newest sponsor and patron, Phil Amthor of WeHaveDonuts.com. Pretty cool. David Medinas, Mark Squire, Dave Powell, Jared Albrick, Rich Reimer, Michael Kirshner, Bill Matthews, Joey Miller, Matthew Wagstaff. Our Patreon just keeps growing and growing, and that's just going to keep White Rocket able to do more and more cool stuff. Maybe someday even as cool as stuff as Ron and Eric are doing. So go to patreon.com, patreon.com/Van Allen Plexico, and you can join the White Rocket family and help us do more cool shows like the one that you've just been listening to with Eric and Ron. Guys, thanks so much for coming on today and helping to get the word out about this, because, Ron, I totally agree, it's a rising tide that will lift all boats in our community, and we need to make sure it happens. Thanks a bunch, guys.
Yeah. Thank you, Van.
Well, thank you. It's been fun.
Great. All right, and the Wacket Rocket's going to get out of here for another week. We'll see you guys down the road.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Hang on a second. Yeah.
That's Brother Bones. He's out for revenge on you, Eric.
Yeah, it's a, well, I haven't committed any misdeeds today, so I don't think Brother Bones is after me.